Welcome back into the Student Section Podcast. It's all college football all the time. Hope you guys enjoy the episode today.
All right, what's up, guys? Welcome back to the Student Section Podcast. This is Steven. I'm here today with my partner, Garen.
Hey, what's good, guys?
There's 17 days till college football as of recording this, so it's getting pretty close, pretty exciting. I can't wait for this season to start. We got a couple different topics to talk about today that are pretty interesting, so just starting it right up, we got to talk about the transfer portal and, like, waivers. So, getting right into that, you know, there's been a lot of drama recently around college football with the transfer portal and people getting waivers and other people not getting waivers to be able to play. So, I know a lot of college football coaches have been, you know, displeased with it, have voiced their displeasure with it. But, you know, a lot of the fans have also as well with, you know, some of the players getting waivers and some of the other ones not. But at the same time, I think it does create an interesting, you know, a good thing for the players to be able to get in the portal. But it's also interesting for the fans to look at and pay attention to.
Yeah, definitely. You know, right now I think the NCAA really needs to find a balance between what's going to help both the players and the coaches, because right now there's a lot of, you know, disagreement among coaches because, you know, the majority of them probably don't like the transfer portal because their players can, you know, enter the transfer portal and pretty much leave anytime they want. But, you know, if you look at it from a fan's perspective, you know, it's honestly pretty exciting because it's a lot like, and we'll talk about this a little later, it's a lot like free agency in pro sports, which is, I mean, it's exciting, you know, where a player, especially like that linebacker from Alabama the other day, who I know he got dismissed, but he entered the transfer portal and everyone's wondering, you know, did something go wrong at Alabama, and also where he's going to land. So stuff like that, it creates a lot of storylines, especially in the off season, that many fans can pay attention to. Then, you know, for the coaches, they probably don't like those storylines.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely gives life to college football, especially in the off season. So it's interesting, but I have different issues with the transfer portal and waivers. Before I say that, the biggest thing, the transfer portal definitely has good intentions. You know, it's supposed to be there so collegiate athletes, student athletes can, you know, if they don't feel right where they are, they can hop in the portal and be able to transfer more easily, more quickly to a place where they feel more comfortable, you know, where they feel at home. So I like it. It has a good intentions. I think it's positive intentions, but I don't know about the execution. It's not necessarily the best. So one of the first problems I have with it is that when a player enters the portal, it, like, always goes public. All that information always goes public. So it causes issues in the locker room with their teammates. You know, fan bases, you know, there's a lot of pressure from the fans, from the media, for these players to, you know, to leave because they want to, you know, they want to see them in different places. They want to see where they're going to go and where they're going to land. So it definitely causes issues, you know, challenges for the coach to, like, keep the team chemistry in check and, you know, keep their team motivated while, you know, these guys are in the portal.
Yeah, I agree with that. One thing I want to touch on is, if I'm not mistaken, like you said about the media leaking different stuff, if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure there are websites that have transfer portal trackers. So whenever a player enters the transfer portal, anyone can go on in there and log on and see who's currently in the transfer portal and the history of the transfer portal. I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure there's some kind of website out there.
24/7 tracks it.
So. Yeah, okay. So first off, as far as, you know, from the NCAA's perspective, that needs to be shut off. That way it doesn't create drama around the locker room, especially in the season, because that's the main problem that the coaches are having is because player enters the portal and then it gets made public and then their teammates, you know, don't think they're 100% committed, and, you know, that's just not good for either party because it puts pressure on both the coaches to keep, like you said, the chemistry up and, you know, a family-like atmosphere. You know, they got a all teams are trying to achieve their goal, and if not everyone's bought in, it's difficult for the coach to sell that. And then also for the student athlete, it's hard for them to, you know, decide what they're going to do when they don't have respect from their teammates and their coaches are probably already mad at them. And then you got fans on social media and different media outlets leaking different things that may be true or may not be true. So, yeah, I think the leakage, you know, within, you know, different media outlets, that definitely needs to be shut off, which is going to be hard to do because nearly impossible.
Yeah. That would be hard to do, but yeah, that it going public is a big issue that, you know, maybe they can fix. I don't know, but that, so for the player, like we were talking earlier, there's definitely the majority, overwhelming majority of the players that enter the transfer portal do not stay with their current school. They transfer, and that's most likely whether these players are, like, some of them probably just look at their options. You know, they might not be pleased with whatever, and so they enter the portal to see what, you know, where they can go. And then, you know, their teammates find out about it, and now the teammates don't want them there because they, you know, they don't think they're committed to this team after they enter the portal. So now they're, like, basically guaranteed to transfer because
to leave.
Yeah, because their teammates don't want them now, and so that causes a big issue for, you know, the players in the transfer
I just
portal.
Think it puts too much pressure on both the coaches and the player, and that's where the NCAA's having trouble right now is finding a balance, because especially, and we talked about this you know, off air or not on here, is that I think one option they could explore is, you know, making the portal only active to where players can enter the portal and be recruited by other coaches in the off season, or, you know, just not during the season, because that's where most of the problems are seeming from, especially for the coaches. Because in the season, think about if a player enters the transfer portal and then they have a game on Saturday, but they're being recruited by coaches all across the country, then their mind's definitely not going to be bought in, and they have 1,000 things thrown at them, and they have to make a decision whether they're going to stay, whether they're going to transfer, and then also on top of that, they got to prepare for this game when they may not even be playing for.
Exactly. So, it causes, you know, issues for the coaches and the players, the team as a whole. So that's one issue, is the information going public. That it just causes mass chaos. Another issue is that then once you enter the transfer portal, is these other coaches from other schools can see that. And so now these coaches from other schools are now recruiting players that are already committed or enrolled at this current school. So,
which is allowed. It's allowed. That's allowed. It's not like these coaches are going behind people's backs and trying to recruit. Like,
exactly.
That's one of the things that the portal allows, is for coaches to reach out to different players to present, you know, come here, to try to recruit them, come here. That way we can offer you this, and it gives the transfer, the athlete who's transferring, many options.
Yeah, and
but it can still cause a lot of problems.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's the best, because it's similar, and we talked about this earlier before as well, before we started recording. It's similar to tampering in the NBA when, you know, GMs can't, like, recruit players to come to their team because, you know, that's against the rules. It's called tampering. And so that's basically what's happening here, except it's allowed. And so I don't know if that's the best, you know, because if I was a coach, I wouldn't want a coach from a different school, like, saying, hey, yeah, come here, we'll do this, we'll give you this, that sort of thing. I don't know if that's the best thing for college football.
Yeah, I think, like I was saying earlier, that's why I think there should be in no way, shape, or form the transfer portal should be active during the season, because then an athlete may enter the transfer portal and you got different coaches coming at you, and then your mind is racing, and you got to focus on school, you got to focus on this game's coming up, oh, and I got practice, but, you know, oh, I really don't want to be here, so I'm not going to give it my all, and then my teammates see that, and then, you know, they're like, this kid doesn't want to be here, so now I've got to transfer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It just creates too many problems, especially in the season. I don't think I'd have that much of a problem with it if it were in the off season and, you know, you don't have practice and stuff, and a coach wants, and you're in the portal and a coach wants to contact you and present, you know, something that they can offer. I don't really have a problem with that, but it's different in the season.
Yeah, and Nick Saban has voiced his opinions on this a lot. And he said that the spirit of the transfer portal is a positive thing for the players, but the issue is that they start handing out these waivers too freely. They're just handing out waivers to whoever they want. And so then it basically, Nick Saban was saying how it's basically just free agency and, like, you know, for the NBA or the NFL or whatever, because these players can just enter and then leave whenever they want, and then they get immediate eligibility to play. And, you know, if you had set rules for who you're going to give the waivers to, then it might be okay. But the problem is, when you hand out a waiver to Tate Martell, who left,
because he got beat out. Yeah. Or Justin Fields was transferring there, sorry.
Yeah, Justin Fields transfers to Ohio State, and Tate Martell, you know, he doesn't think he's going to win the job, and so he leaves and immediately is eligible to play at Miami, which is all fine, except then you have guys like Luke Ford, who leaves Georgia to go to a lesser program, a lesser team in Illinois, back home, to play in front of his sick grandfather, and then he's not granted, you know, a waiver. So it just doesn't make sense. It's not consistent. It's not clear. And that's the biggest, you know, hate that the NCAA is getting, is because you have guys that have legit reasons to play and get immediate eligibility, and they're not getting it, and these guys that don't have a real reason are getting it.
Yeah, I just don't understand where the NCAA is coming from. Like, if there's some sort of certain criteria that every single transfer has to meet to be, like, eligible or something, because I feel like anyone in their right mind would give Luke Ford immediate eligibility.
Yeah, exactly.
Compared to Tate Martell, when you just got your waiver cleared, but the reason you transferred to Miami was because you didn't want to compete. You wanted a starting job.
Exactly.
I don't get it. So that is just definitely corrupt, that if you look at it that way, because some players are going to be eligible when you compare them to others, like they shouldn't be, like Luke Ford and Tate Martell, like we just discussed. So I think they got to clean that up, because it honestly looks really bad on the NCAA.
Yeah. It looks terrible, because, I mean, it appears that these big-name players, who are these big recruits and these guys that people want to watch, are getting eligibility because the NCAA knows that people are going to want to see them play, so they'll make more money.
It's going to improve ratings. Yeah. It's going to improve the team sales for apparel, stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, ticket sales. I feel like that's all what it's all about, what it comes down to, really.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. And so then you have these guys that have legit reasons and they're not getting those waivers. It's, you know, I don't agree with it. That's pretty sketchy.
I think they just need to be 100% transparent to, you know, the fans, coaches, and players, and give us some guidelines that we can follow, you know, because there's no reason why Luke Ford or the guy that went to
Brock Hoffman,
yeah, him,
from Coastal Carolina.
Yeah. There's no reason that they should have their waivers denied and Tate Martell has his, you know, he's immediately eligible. It just doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. There needs to be more consistency, more clarity from the NCAA. They need, you know, it needs to be like, okay, if you have this reasons or these reasons, then you get
certain criteria.
Exactly.
Which I don't know if they have it now, but if they do have it now, then it's terrible.
it's either bad or not using it. They're just not looking at it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the transfer portal should not be free agency. Like, that's basically,
they aren't getting paid.
Yeah, they aren't getting. You know, there's no salaries. It shouldn't be like that. They're making a commitment to a team. If, you know, if they transfer, it's normally been they always sit out a year unless they have a real reason. So if they have a real reason, great. Give them, you know, let them play because, you know, it wasn't their fault for whatever, you know, whatever the reason was.
Whether that be an injury, you know, coming closer to home, or in Chris Steele's case, I think he had a teammate that had some abuse allegations or something like that. So he didn't want to be involved in that.
Yeah.
So he transferred. So, like, those are all good, but it's not good when you look at it compared to, like, you know, Martell got this. He got his waiver because the NCAA wants to have Miami's ratings go up on Saturday nights when they play Florida. Their ratings are going to go up. It just looks like they're like, okay, Tate Martell, let's let him be immediately eligible, but not Luke Ford because he's going to Illinois and no one wants to watch that.
Yeah.
Exactly. It doesn't matter. Just, yeah. So that's where I have a problem with it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's bad. It's honestly, you know, and we were talking about this earlier too, that the transfer portal is kind of fun. It's like, since it is like free agency, it's fun for the fans. You know, it keeps it interesting in the off season, and like, it's cool to keep up with it and see where players are going to land and stuff. But it's not cool when some of these players are basically, you know, they're just getting thrown to the side and the NCAA doesn't really care about them when they have real reasons. And then other guys, you know, they're getting a free pass to play when they just didn't want to compete for a job or whatever.
Yeah, from a fan's perspective, you know, entertainment purposes, you know, I love the transfer portal, but I also feel bad for these kids like Luke Ford and Brock Hoffman who are going closer to home or wherever to play. That way, you know, they're, in Luke Ford's case, his sick grandfather can watch him play and he can be closer to him. You know, I feel like, you know, they're kind of getting the short end of the stick, so to speak, when, you know, that if you look at the NCAA, it just looks like they care about the money and don't care about, you know, these student-athletes' lives.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, Tate Martell basically just requested a trade.
I mean, yeah, like, just, yeah.
So, yeah, there needs to be more consistency, more clarity. But we'll be talking about Tate Martell later in the podcast. Got more talking about Miami. So we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back with the Student Section Podcast. Welcome back to the Student Section Podcast. Now we're going to be touching on the Miami quarterback battle that's been going on. There's still three guys in the quarterback battle, apparently, according to head coach Manny Diaz. We have the returning starter for most of the year, Perry, I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce his first name, and then we have Tate Martell, and then Jaren Williams, I believe. So, you know, all these guys, they have potential, they have their talents, but, you know, it was expected Tate Martell was going to, after transferring over from Ohio State, that he was basically being guaranteed the starting job, but it doesn't look that way.
I think it's probably not a good sign that you have a quarterback battle, let alone three guys still in the running, because, you know, I know a lot of Miami fans, especially I've seen on our posts, whenever we had a Miami-related post, they would, you know, predict 10 wins and that Tate Martell was, you know, gonna be the reason for all their success. But right now it's looking like he's been struggling a lot, as well as some of the other guys too. Which is probably not a good sign. You really need to nail down a starter early. That way, they can get comfortable with the offense, because all of them are splitting reps right now. So there's not one guy who's been in place for 2 weeks, like Florida, who at their first game, Felipe Franks, that had their starter, obviously. So I don't really think it's a good sign. You know, maybe Tate Martell will still win the job, but I don't know. I feel like, honestly, if it goes this long, maybe Tate Martell's not the guy. Maybe it might be Perry, but we'll see.
Yeah, Perry.
I mean, I'm not there, so
yeah,
I can't really judge. But
yeah, Perry's definitely the most experienced guy. He played the majority of last year, and I have all their stats right here. Perry, he's only completed 50% of his passes, so he's not the best, you know, he's not the best passer, but he, you know, he's athletic and can make, he can run, but he has 97 for 191, and he's with right over 1,000 yards, 13 touchdowns, and 6 interceptions. So, yeah, like I said, he's not necessarily the most, you know, efficient and best passer out there, but he's athletic and can make plays. We have Tate Martell, who, in his short, you know, playing time, he's 23 for 28. 269 yards and one touchdown. So for his little playing time, his stature, very good. But, you know, he hasn't been apparently performing the way they thought he would. And then redshirt freshman Williams, he's only had 3 pass attempts, so he's obviously the least experienced. And so it's just interesting, you know, Tate Martell transferring from Ohio State after Justin Fields got there, you know, and then he transfers to Miami to, you know, most likely start, but now it's not really looking that way. I've been reading and heard a lot of stuff that Perry is probably the expected starter. You know, he might be winning the battle right now just because of his experience, because nobody's really outperforming the other right now. So just because of that experience, it's putting him in the spot to potentially start. But, you know.
Yeah, as far as Miami's a team, they're not going in with a – I'm sure they won't go in with a 2-QB system or still a battle, because most coaches don't like doing that. I don't know what Manny Diaz is planning on doing the first game. But if you don't have a – you know, if they're not feeling confident. Obviously, the coach isn't going to say that, but they're still having a battle. They still don't know who's the best guy for the job, and they're not feeling confident in Martell. Then week one's not really looking good for them, in my opinion. Because Florida, they have a couple secondary questions with some guys transferring and suspensions the first week too. But right now, it's not really looking like Miami's gonna be able to take that game down to the wire like we once thought. With Tate Martell not performing the way he needs to be, Miami's defense could be really good. They got a lot of transfers, and Manny Diaz is a really good defensive coach. I just don't know about their offense. I know Dan Enos is supposed to be a really good offensive coordinator. Obviously, he was at Alabama last year, and he did some good things as an analyst. But right now their offense is looking a little shaky, and especially the quarterback position, like it has been the past few years.
Yeah, we predicted Miami to go 8-4 this upcoming year, and I know some people were thinking, you know, that they'll be better than that. That some people think they've got a shot at, you know, giving Clemson a run for their money in the ACC and stuff like that. I don't know about all that. I mean, I think they'll definitely improve from last year. I think they'll be a better team. I think, you know, assuming Tate Martell is the starter and performs, you know, at least half of what people think he is, it'll probably be a better, you know, quarterback situation than last year, because last year wasn't all that great. So, you know, I think they'll be better. Their defense will be good. Their offense might be a little shaky, but, you know, I think they'll be better. But I think 2020 will be the year for Miami to make like a comeback, for them to be, you know, show who they are, show that they're, you know, they're a power in college football, top, you know, top 25, obviously. So, but I don't know about this year. I don't think they'll be all that this year.
I think the one good thing that Miami has going for them right now, 8-4 is still a good season, especially with a new coach coming in. And 8-4 would, their offseason hype would be really, really big. But one thing that I think Miami has going for them is that they're in the ACC, which is huge, because the ACC is really weak. You know, it's going to be wide open, and they're not going to be playing a lot of, you know, talented teams, except they have Florida early on, but that's not in their division, so that won't affect their standings or, you know, where they'll stack up in the pecking order of the ACC. Yeah, we predicted them to go 8-4, and maybe in 2020 they can give Clemson for a run for their money. Sorry, but I don't see it this year. I see them improving, definitely on the defensive side of the ball, a little bit on the offensive side of the ball. If Perry's the starter and he can improve, obviously we know he's a heck of an athlete, and we don't know much about his passing ability. But maybe Dan Enos can get the most out of him, or whether it may be Tate Martell too. But right now it's looking like Perry. So, you know, we'll see what they can do in the ACC, especially in a weak conference. I expect them to, you know, have some games where they play bad opponents, they blow them out, and then, you know, maybe give some good opponents a run for their money.
Yeah, I mean, that, like you said, that's big that they play in the ACC, because, I mean, they play in the Coastal, so last year Pitt won the Coastal and they were 7-5 and they ended up finishing 7-7 on the year.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I think they're, as I'm looking at it right now, I think their biggest competition's either going to be Virginia Tech or Virginia.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm not sure if they play, if those games are away or at home off the top of my head. But probably Virginia, to be honest. They have a, with a, what's his name, Bryce Perkins. They have a pretty good team over there. But Miami could still beat them. So we see 8 wins realistically, and then, you know, if they make a bowl game, maybe 9 wins. I feel like 8 to 9 wins, Miami fans should not be disappointed about that at all, considering what happened last year. You know, they had a winning season, but it was clearly time for Mark Richt to step down. There wasn't much potential, I guess, as far as some other ACC programs. If you look around, like, obviously Clemson at the top. You know, I know Georgia Tech, they might have something going there, especially with their offensive change. And then hopefully Syracuse and Virginia. My hope is that in the ACC, a lot of these teams can improve, and it'll be a much stronger conference these next, you know, maybe 5 years. So
yeah,
that's just what I have to say about the ACC. But yeah, 8 to 9 wins for any Miami fans listening. Don't be disappointed about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, that's improvement. You're going in the right direction. And yeah, I mean, the Coastal is wide open. So I think top three is Virginia, Virginia Tech, Miami, and I think then 2020 Miami could easily win the Coastal, and then most likely, obviously, go up against Clemson in the ACC championship. But yeah, I just want to see some teams in the ACC give Clemson like more of a struggle. You know, I guess Syracuse was kind of up there last year, but I mean, if that's your toughest game in the ACC,
and Trevor Lawrence got knocked out of that game.
Yeah, he got hurt that game too. So like, yeah, I just want to see some other teams give Clemson a little bit of competition. You know, make it a little more interesting. You know, the SEC is obviously much tougher. The Big Ten, I would argue, is tougher. I would say the ACC is a good step down right now from the Big Ten, probably in the third. Maybe, honestly, last year, though, I might put them behind the Big 12.
Yeah. One other thing I was going to say is, let's say that the Hurricanes do get 8 to 9 wins. Think about some SEC programs last year with first-year head coaches. You know, it was a lot of them were struggling to get to a bowl game. Tennessee didn't make a bowl game. I know Matt Luke was in his first year as he served as the interim, but it was his first year as the actual head coach. And, you know, I mean, if you put one of those two teams in the ACC, you know, maybe they could get eight to nine wins. So, you know, you got a real nice shot to build a nice program, especially, I know Manny Diaz is a heck of a recruiter. So I expect them to rebound from last year, and then hopefully next year we can see them giving Clemson a run for their money. To wrap things up, I'm going to run through a few reports through the fall camp around college football. We got Georgia linebacker Brenton Cox was dismissed from the team this week. That was being reported. I know there's some speculation whether he would stay on the team or not. Some people were saying that he was dismissed and some weren't, but it looks like he has been dismissed from the team. He was a freshman last year. He appeared in 13 games, so that'll be a big loss for them. Florida defensive back C.J. Williams will be out for the year with an Achilles injury. That's a huge blow to their secondary because they've already had some key pieces that have either transferred or will be suspended for the first week. One being Chris Steele, who transferred, obviously. So Todd Grantham is going to have to do something with that secondary, at least for the first couple weeks. Auburn wide receiver Anthony Schwartz had surgery on his hand and will be questionable for the first week against Oregon. So that'll be a big loss for them if he can't suit up. We got UAB star corner Bronte Harris is out indefinitely with a foot injury. He's one of their best players that I read about. So if UAB doesn't have him this season, that'll be definitely huge. And then we got Tennessee defensive lineman Emmett Gooden is out for the year with a torn ACL. You know, you might recognize Emmett Gooden's name. He starred in Last Chance U Season 3.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Student Section Podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. And as always, tune in next week for another weekly episode.